All right, you're live on the Arms Room with Glenn.
Andrew.
And John, man, I just talked to John yesterday, and he is still easily a month out, if not more. He was hoping to be back, but things happen. Whatever, they happen. So that's what it is. But we're happy to be here in our new studio. We're pretty jacked about that. It's not even mildly complete right now. So right now, we're just in our corner of our overall large room, so we hope the audio sounds okay. But we will be putting up an actual freaking studio together. We've got all the foam sitting right over there, and we're going to line all the walls with foam, and we're going to get like really good audio in here. So hopefully by next week, we should have all that in place. So we're really excited about that. Yes. So let's see, what's our to-do, what's our to-talk-about stuff. Patrons, thank you so much for being patrons. We really appreciate that. I wanted to read, did I tell the story about, I did tell the story last week about the guy who, kid got his foot chopped by the propeller. Didn't I tell that?
Yes.
I thought I did. I couldn't remember. But anyways, I was rereading that story, and I just wanted to remind you guys, man, carry your freaking med kits. Like, for some reason, in the last couple of weeks, we've gotten more listeners and students from ours telling us about using their med kits than almost any other compressed or same amount of time in the past. So just be aware out there. Carry your med kits. It's not very hard to carry one. Freaking carry your med kits and be prepared to use them. That's it. That's all I got for that. But patrons, thank you for being patrons of the show. Make sure you check out Patreon for all the other advantages that you get of being a patron. Make sure you're submitting your show ideas. Make sure you're letting us know what you want to see. We got a lot of cool Patreon advantage or Patreon or whatever advantages coming up very soon, especially with the new studio. Once we get everything boxed in here and completed and the rest of this area here is a little bit cleared out, we're going to be building up our little structure in here. We're going to start doing tactics presentations and low-light presentations and weapons manipulation presentations here at the classroom, and then all that's going to be recorded and made available to all of our patrons. So if you're not a patron right now, you should definitely jump on Patreon and become a patron. It's $1 a month. If you're listening to the show right now and you don't get $1 worth of value out of it, you should stop fucking listening. Or $5 or $10. $10 gets you kind of access to everything we're going to be doing. So definitely make sure you jump on that level, because that gets you the extra show and gets you some other cool stuff.
And we're going to start giving stuff away again.
We're going to get back to the giveaways. In fact, we have a giveaway we're going to be doing probably, I don't know, maybe next week, but definitely sometime this month. We have at least one giveaway, maybe two, that we're going to be doing. So if you guys are interested in that, freaking jump on it. All right. What else we got? It's very, very sad for me to let you guys know, if you didn't know already, that that our great associate and friend and very, very respected member of the training community, William April, passed away last week on Friday, on Thursday, and we're really sad to hear that. I was going back through the notes that I had taken after meeting William almost 8 years ago, and all the different things that he had taught me about criminal behavior and self-defense and the law and application of it. So much information that I've gotten from that guy. So much of it that we incorporate into our training even. He's going to be greatly missed. Greatly missed. So if you have an opportunity, go look up April Risk Consulting. That's April with two L's. Look him up on Instagram. See all the amazing things that he posted. So much valuable information available there. Please make sure you look him up online. Read every article. Don't let his legacy pass on just because he did. Make sure you're out there getting the information he passed on. You know, we used to love having him here in the Phoenix area once or twice a year, thanks to, you know, our friend Cecil Birch, who would bring him out. He was just so valuable to us and to our students, and to the area, to our community. And it's really, really just a fucking bummer that he passed away. So, yeah, look up lots of good stuff by William April. So much good information out there about him. This last weekend, we had a really great open house, medical open house over at the Tactical Medic. We did two Stop the Bleed classes, did a kids class, tons of information got passed on about medicine. Yeah. If you missed it, you missed it. We do Stop the Bleed classes for free every second Saturday of every month in Mesa at the Tactical Medic. So if you're missing out on them, you shouldn't be, because they're freaking free. They're kid-friendly. They're family-friendly. Make sure you you know, you're bringing them in. Why is this thing go dark here?
Mm.
You know?
Flip it up.
Oh, God. Now I got to do stuff. All right. Paused? Oh, it paused. Oh, that's why it sucks. Oh, are we back? Maybe we're back. We don't know. All right. Who fucking cares? All right. Another bummer here. Marine Corps lost 9 service members in the Marine Corps' deadliest incident at sea in many, many years.
Yeah, this is a crazy story.
Yeah, their floating armored vehicle. I don't know if it was a LAV or what it was. I don't know if it says later here. Took on water and sunk on Tuesday evening off the coast of California. Over by San Clemente Island. Great fishing over there. The service members are Private First Class Brian Baltierra, Lance Corporal Marco Barranco, Private First Class Evan Bath, Navy Hospitalman Christopher Nem, Private First Class Jack Ostrovsky, Corporal Wesley Rod,
went black again.
Lance Corporal Chase Sweetwood, and Corporal Cesar Villanueva, and also Lance Corporal Guillermo Perez. All very young men. All kids, man. Fuck. The oldest dude was 23.
Wow.
Jeez. 18 to 23-year-old guys. That freaking sucks, man. That really, really sucks. So, I was going to see 7 other Marines were recovered alive. 2 were still hospitalized. 5 returned their unit. It was a, I'm looking. It looks like a LAV, but I don't know. AAV. It was an AAV. So, I don't know what your phone's doing over here, man.
I think it's Instagram.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, so that really sucks, man. Fair winds and following seas, Marines. Beirut, holy shit. Massive freaking explosion. Was it 2.7 tons?
Yeah.
Of ammonium nitrate or something like that? It's a massive, absolutely massive amount of explosives that just detonated, and holy shit. Still under investigation, which means probably not an accident, but we don't know. We don't know what's going on.
There was another explosion in Baltimore.
Yes, it was a gas line. I saw that this morning.
Yeah.
The gas line freaking exploded. So, I don't know what that's all about. Killed one lady, mm-hmm. Wounded a couple other
three.
People.
Three were, has leveled 3 Baltimore homes, killing at least 1 person and 2 others injured. Wow.
A volcano erupted in Indonesia.
End of the world, man.
2020, dude. Bring it on, 2020. So that's what's happening there. Whatever. Man, I don't know. The news is always interesting these days because it's mostly just about like coronavirus cases, which you can't know if they're real or not.
Yeah.
You know, more mask stuff, businesses getting fined. It's interesting these days that it's not legal to open your, or it's illegal, I mean, to open your business, but it's not illegal to loot a business.
Yeah.
So that's a peculiar situation that we found ourselves in. So we've got all that situation where you're trying to have businesses that are trying to stay open, businesses that are going out of business. We have all these companies that are already filing for bankruptcy. And I mean, we might see a massive amount of businesses just go out of business here in the next couple of months. Just done.
Meanwhile, what country is it that 100 cases?
New Zealand. Yeah.
Are back to normal. 100 days with no new cases.
Have you read about Australia?
No.
Holy shit. They are on lockdown of a whole other kind. They actually have law enforcement and military going door to door checking on people. It's a $100,000 fine for any business that opens.
What?
They have a curfew that's like 8 p.m. or something like that till 6 a.m. or something along those lines. They have a curfew every night. They're only allowed to be outside one at a time for an hour a day.
No way.
You're only allowed to. I don't know. This is what Garrett was telling me. I don't know.
I'm gonna text Zoran.
This might be fake news.
Yeah, I'll ask.
This was in Victoria. I'm gonna look it up right now. Garrett was telling me about it this morning.
I'll text Zoki.
Yeah, I was like, "There's no way," and he was like, "Oh no, man."
Or Triff.
There's like curfews and all kinds of stuff. COVID-19 in Victoria, Australian Government Department of Health. Victorian restrictions. From 5 a.m. to 8 p.m., you can only leave your home for one of the following reasons. This is straight from the fucking Australian government website.
Jesus.
Necessary goods and services with limits. Exercise with limits. Care and health care with limits. Work in line with restrictions and on workplaces. Dude, your phone's pissing me off.
Here, just hand it to me.
Some limited personal reasons, such as in an emergency. These are stage 4 restrictions.
That's crazy.
If you live in regional Victoria, including Mitchell Shire, there are only 4 reasons you can leave your house. Gee, many Christmas. You are no longer allowed to have visitors to your home or visit other people in their homes, and you must wear a mask. Here's your phone. You must wear a mask when you leave home, unless an exception applies. It's enforceable starting 2nd of August. There's border closures, forced testing. Yeah, man, this is some real shit. It's crazy, dude. Holy cow. All right, well, sucks to be in Australia, I guess. I mean, hit up your cousin, see what's up.
Yeah, I'm going to text him. Yeah.
But they're not in Victoria. They're somewhere else.
No, New South Wales. Yeah.
All right. So that's it for news. Whatever. Wear your mask or don't at this point. Whatever. All right. Redwire Gear Moment brought to you by RedwireGear.com. As this pinnacle of the summer has now reached us, and hopefully we start getting a little bit cooler, make sure you check your vehicles and your daily carry gear for expired products thanks to the heat or the high levels of humidity, tape that becomes goopy, adhesives that have gone bad, you know, things that have been destroyed because of the heat, bottled water that's gone bad in your vehicle. Look at your emergency supplies and your emergency preparedness tools and make sure that the really, really crazy heat has not destroyed any of them, and either cycle those things out to the garbage or into training supplies or one way, shape, or form, get rid of them. Do the same thing after any major change in the weather, cold weather to hot, hot to cold, whatever it may be, lots of humid to a little bit of humid, whatever it may be. So Redwire Gear Moment brought to you by RedwireGear.com. All right, our topic today is we're going to be discussing some hunting concepts, all right? Now, before you're like, oh God, I'm not a hunter, so I'm going to turn it off. Wait, all right? First of all, let's talk about why you should consider getting involved in hunting, all right? First of all, it's a great way to get your ass outdoors. It's a great way to get you into the nature and a great way to get you using the tools and the equipment that you have. It's a great way to get you active. It's a great way to get you appreciating what's going on outside of your life. It's a great way to get you understanding how the circle of life actually happens. Even if you're not hunting with a gun, hunt with a camera. Hunt with your eyeballs and your memories. I don't give a shit. But do something to get out there and hunt. All right? All right. We'll see if the thing's better now.
It said poor connection. Whatever. So we'll
find out now. Okay. So just hunting. The concept of getting out and just getting outside is going to help you, especially these days when everyone's getting all cooped up. And hunting season is upon us, man. It's August. A lot of hunting seasons have started. They're going to continue to keep booming up. So get out there and explore and see what's going on. So hunting, good thing to get started in for those reasons. It's really good to get out there and test yourself. Really see, can you sneak up on an animal? How close can you get? Again, even if you don't want to kill the thing, go out with a camera. I don't care. How close can you get to an animal? Can you outsmart, outcraft an animal? Everyone thinks animals are just stupid because they see them get hit by a fucking car. Go out where they live and you see how stupid they are. You know, they're not, man. They freaking live out there. And when you're out there bitching and moaning because it's raining or it's cold or whatever, dude, they already have a solution for that. Get out there and learn from the animals about better ways to survive or maybe more simpler, easier ways to live. I mean, hunting animals has taught me a lot about myself just as much as it's taught me about them and about nature and things of that regard. So make sure that you're out there just appreciating nature. When I go out to hunt an animal, I'm definitely out there to kill an animal. You know, I'm not out there to just have a good time. Like, yeah, it's fine to have a good time and not kill something. That's fine. But make sure that if you're going out there, like, you know what the goal is ultimately. Are you out there to kill something? Are you out there just to take its photo? Are you out there just to sneak up on it? Whatever it is. But just being out there, even if I'm out there to kill something, I am appreciating nature along the way. I'm appreciating all the things that are around me. I'm appreciating the resources. I'm appreciating the animal. I appreciate the animal whose life I might take. You know, I greatly appreciate them. I value them and I respect them. So you're going to go out to nature, you're going to learn a different type of respect. Nature will fucking kill you. Without thinking too much about it, it will just kill you. So it's really important to get out and appreciate it from that perspective. Other reasons you got to get out there. Get out there and actually test your equipment. A lot of these guys have this equipment, and gals, have all this badass gear, right? Chest rigs and plate carriers and cool fucking guns and all this shit. Backpacks and rucks all loaded down with all this shit. And they never really go out and utilize it in an extreme situation outside of hiking around the park with it or running around the range with it. Take that shit out and hike up a mountain with it. Take that shit out and freaking spend a couple days dealing with it and working out of it. Again, even if you're just hunting with a camera or just hunting with your eyes and your memory, that's fine. Get out there and see what your gear is made out of. When it's raining, put your rain gear on. What limitations does your rain gear have? Like, being out hunting, if you're pursuing that animal, forces you to have to pay attention to what you're doing with your gear and forces you to use the gear. So that's a really, really important aspect of, you know, what you're dealing with. Just testing your equipment and dealing with that perspective. So another thing that hunting is really going to do for you is it's going to help you meet new people. It's going to help you meet a whole new type of culture of people that you didn't know might have existed. And I'm not talking about the hee-haws, all right? I grew up with some hee-haws. I know most people are just like, oh, man, you mean like the guy who throws a deer up on his hood or whatever? No, I'm not talking about the guy who throws a fucking deer on his hood, all right? I'm not talking about the guy who goes out and just gets drunk and shoots at everything that moves. Those aren't hunters, right? Those are just douchebags, and they're the same douchebags that you find in every other sport or every other everything that you're going to do, right? Those douchebags, they're in motocross, they're in shooting, they're in competition, they're in whatever you do, they're there, right? I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about people who go out and really respect the woods. They really are concerned about conservation. They really care about the animals. They really honestly understand what they're doing out there. Like, those are the kinds of people you're going to meet. And they're amazing people, and they come from all walks of life, and they come from all different kinds of professions. You're going to meet some incredible people in the hunting community. You really are. They're just some amazing people, some people you may not think hunted, right? So that's another great reason to get out there. It also is probably one of the greatest self-reliance thing you're going to do. Now, a lot of people think, okay, when shit hits the fan, I'm going to grab my fucking rifle, and I'm going to go out into the woods, and I'm going to shoot me a deer, right? Yeah, you and 1.6 million other fucking people. I mean, the reality of just going out to the woods and shooting a deer is, like I've said it on the show before and I'll say it again, just look in the back of like the game and fish regulations of whatever state you're in. You're in Arizona, you can literally pull it up in the back of the regs. It'll show you by unit number how many tags are issued in that unit every year and the average success rate in that unit. I mean, the average success rate for most big game in the state of Arizona for people who actively entered into a lottery, got drawn, took time off, went out of their way to go hunt an animal, those very specific people, the average success rate's like 30 to 40%. Now you consider you're one of these people who doesn't actively do that. You think you're going to walk through, when I'm in the woods, man, I see deer all the fucking time. Yeah, you see some does or whatever all the time. That's right. But consider the fact that if you and 1.6 million of your closest fucking friends decide to go out into the woods at the same time, those deer are no longer going to be there. They're either going to be killed immediately or they're going to disappear into the deepest, darkest reaches of the freaking woods. They're going to get real smart, real freaking fast. Most people don't even know how to use the entire animal. So they would waste like crazy anyway. And the amount of deer and elk and buffalo and whatever else that we have would be just wiped from the freaking planet. I mean, it would not take long. You look at like the buffalo hunters, you know, of early American history, and you're like, dude, just a few hundred guys with rifles literally wiped the American bison off the plains.
Yeah.
You don't think that other people that were way more than a few hundred would do the exact same thing to any other population? The waters would be poisoned. The streams and rivers and lakes would be shit in and pissed in and washed in and completely freaking polluted. The majority of natural resources is going to go the way of the freaking dinosaur in apocalypse, right? So I'm not talking about self-reliance in the way of apocalypse. What I'm talking about is you go through all the effort and energy to, let's say, go out and hunt, and you're going to kill something, and you kill that animal, and you dress that animal out, and you take that meat home, and you clean it, and you prepare it, and you eat it. That is a from field to table concept that most people do not get in their life. They buy their hamburger from the store. They've never seen the light drain out of an animal's eyes and then eaten it. That's not what most people experience. And honestly, most hunters don't either. They shoot something from a distance. And then when they get up close to it, they just shoot it again. I mean, I think I've shared this story before, but I'll share it again. When I was a kid, my dad and I were out quail hunting. And he had winged a quail. So he had shot it out of the air, but hadn't killed it. And he picked it up, and he, you know, there's two ways to kill a quail. One of the ways, you just wrap your forefinger or your index finger and your thumb around their neck, and then just kind of cover their head with the rest of your fingers, and you just twist their head off. I mean, it's a tiny little bird with a tiny little spine. Like, you just, and they're dead, instantly dead. And then you just put them in your game bag. And they may seem brutal to people who don't hunt, but it's the fastest, most efficient way to ethically kill that animal if you fucked up killing it the first time. And I remember watching my dad do that. I was a little kid, and I was like, oh, my God, that's some violence, you know? And then it wasn't just maybe a year later or so that I had a shotgun in my hands, and I was out quail hunting with dad. And I this cottontail rabbit ran out, and I blasted this cottontail rabbit. And I didn't hit him very well. And so he's on the ground, he's, you know, screaming. And I only ever got to hunt with single-shot stuff for the first few years of my hunting career. And so I'm loading another shotgun shell, and my dad said, what did you shoot? And he walks over to me. I said, I shot this rabbit over here. I'm going to go shoot again. He's like, nope, you're not. If you're going to kill, you're going to learn how to be a killer. Hand me your shotgun. So I hand him his shotgun, and he walks over, and he said, you put one foot here to hold down his body, and then you put your heel here, and you're going to crush his head. And I'm like, I don't know if I can do that, Dad. And he's like, you're going to do it. And I did it, and I killed that rabbit. And I tell you what, man, that changes the way you think about killing animals when you legit just fucking killed something. I mean, when you really just killed, not from a distance, you didn't shoot it when you got there, it was already dead. Like, you felt its bone crush under the strength of you being a human. It changes the whole way that you like. From that day forward, I respected life to a whole other degree. And maybe everyone didn't grow up hunting that way. I don't know. But I'll tell you, you know, I'll share another thing with you guys, because this is the importance, I think, of appreciating nature. People find it ironic or odd that I greatly respect the animals that I kill, like the coyote, for example. I respect coyotes maybe more than anything else. I have killed truckloads of coyotes. They have to be managed by people. We are the stewards of the land. We fucked everything up, and we now have to manage the animal populations, because the animal populations can't manage themselves because we're still here. Mm-hmm. And as long as we're still here, we're fucking with their ecosystems. And so we have to manage those populations. Now, some places they're managed well, and some places they're managed poorly, but it's still up to us. And I'm sorry, vegan PETA members, you're fucking stupid. That way doesn't work. It doesn't work. We see what happens when you try to make it work. It doesn't. It doesn't work. You can't, especially let predator populations get way out of freaking control. It doesn't work. Historically, it doesn't work. And trying it again isn't going to help it work. It never works. We've seen how it works. I greatly respect the coyote. However, we also have to kill him to keep him in check. You have to. No one else is going to do it. We have to do it. I greatly respect the animal. You know, I enjoy the pursuit and the sport of going out there and outsmarting one of the smartest animals out there. And not just once or twice every now and then, but I mean, I'm good enough. I can do it pretty consistently. And that's a skill, man. I've never killed an animal in my life and then done anything that I would consider rude or unnecessary or whatever to their body or with them. You know, and I don't mean anything weird, you fucking weirdos. I mean, like, I've never left an animal that could otherwise be used, or I've never thrown one across my hood and freaking driven through town or done any of that kind of shit. I've never done anything like that. I killed my first elk when I was, I think I was 11 years old. And I shot her, a cow elk, and I got a good hit, but she didn't die immediately. So I she was quartered to me, and when I shot her, I single lunged her. And I don't think Instagram Live is going to work.
Yeah, it keeps saying poor connection.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with that. You might hook it up to freaking Wi-Fi or something.
It is on Wi-Fi, honey.
I don't know. Put it on your freaking, put it on the phone service and see what happens. But back to the story. So I single lunged this cow, and she moves up to the underneath the cedar, just a short distance away. And maybe
I took it off of Wi-Fi.
Okay. And she lays down underneath this cedar. And so, you know, once again, I walk up, chamber another round, and my dad's like, you're gonna kill. You're gonna be a killer. You're gonna learn how to kill. And this is my first big animal. You know, I'd shot small animals at this point. So I walked up, and she's struggling hard, you know, and she's looking at us. You know, she knows we're predators. And she can't get up, you know, and she's, you imagine that fear, you know, and that certainty that she had. And so we walk up, take your knife, do the work you need to do to the throat area. And, I'd seen my dad do it a couple days previous on his elk. He'd got a good shot. But he went ahead and his was just kind of death throwing when we got up to him or her. I mean, and so he finished her off. So I did the same thing he did and you know, put my hand on her head and she died. And I think that there's a part of you that really changes when you can appreciate life in that way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then my dad kneeled down next to me. And we started a process that I have continued with not just myself, but also, you know, my kids and certainly Garrett, as he's killed big animals, where you kneel next to them and you touch them, you feel them, you know, and you thank the animal, you thank nature, you thank the earth, you know, you promise you're gonna do your best by them, and then you begin the process, you know, then you start cutting them up and putting them to as best use as you can. Just take that thing. And it's an entirely different, and it's not that when we get a good shot, you know, you see the hunting videos where guys are like, fuck yeah, you know, and they high five. I mean, we do that too because we're excited that we outsmarted this animal and then we made a good shot and now we get a harvest, you know, we get a kill, we get this manly testosterone fueled shit, this caveman shit, this hunter survival shit. We're happy about that. But we don't disrespect the process, you know? And I think that that's part of what some people who look at hunting, they don't get to see that other part. They watch these hunting videos where some guy makes a kill and he's like, fuck yeah, you know, and he's high-fiving his buddies and everyone's like, oh, good for you, you outsmarted a deer. And you're like, listen, you fucking moron, why don't you go out and do it? There's 30 to 40% success rate out here in the Big mm-hmm. West. Maybe back on the cornfields of, you know, Missouri or whatever. Yeah, they just go out, sit in a deer stand and stick a deer. And don't get me wrong, my Missouri friends. Not what you're doing isn't hard. You got to get up butt fuck early in the morning. You got to climb up in that cold ass deer stand and you got to sit there mostly motionless and hang out for hours on end while the deer walks the path. Your type of hunting is different than my type of hunting. It doesn't make it bad hunting. I'm just saying that's what most people see. You know, and so the point is, it's like, dude, people just don't understand what goes on out there. They only see a little bit. Like, you want to hunt, find a good mentor that can teach you like I had. I wish everyone had a dad like I had to teach them how to hunt. I wish everyone had a dad that grew up in Jackson, Wyoming, in the base of the Tetons, in the big game guide hunting business, and could teach them a love and respect for the outdoors and for animals that just is incredible. It's incredible. I mean, I've watched my father really love really loved nature before. Just watched the appreciation in his eyes. Just, it's amazing. You know, it's why he still lives there. It's why he can't give it up. You know, he's getting older every day and certainly not as spry as he used to be, and he just can't give it up. And I understand why. So, back to the hunting thing. That's the element of hunting that you gotta see. And if you don't want to kill, go out with a camera. All right. On to the other stuff. What do you need to get started? Mostly you probably have it. Most of what I hunt with is regular old stuff. Do you have a backpack? Do you have some basic camo? You do not need to look like a fucking leaf, okay? Most camouflage is sold so that people will buy it because people see with people eyes and they think they need to look like a leaf. You don't. There's been an insane amount of research done on camouflage and camouflage technology. You look at modern day camouflages and you'll notice none of them look like fucking leaves anymore. Things like Realtree are still sold because it's almost like a fashion thing at this point. Look at all the new camos out. They're all digital patterns. They're all blobs and colors. That's it. Because everything at distance turns into blobs and colors. Everything at distance turns into blobs and colors. In fact, fine, intricate patterns turn into shittier looking blobs and colors. So you're not trying to look like a leaf. You're not trying to hide from a person who's observing you with an optic. That is not what you're trying to hide from. You're trying to hide from an animal that doesn't see the same way you see. You need to blend in, eliminate the outline of your human body, and generally blend with the colors of the environment. More dark colors than light colors. Almost no matter where you are, unless you're in the fucking deserts of Iraq, all right, you don't really need super light, sandy colored shit. You know, dark greens, dark grays, blacks. Multicam is an amazing camouflage, or Scorpion, or whatever shit they call it now. The ATAX camo, I've been really impressed with over the years. I really like their stuff. Hell, man, most of the shit I use is my old freaking Woodland BDUs. Old shit, 20 freaking years old. And I still use it.
And you mismatch all the time.
I mismatch camo. I don't even know if I hardly ever wear the same camo, ever. I ATAX hat with a BDU top and my multicam pants, and it doesn't matter. The colors and the patterns blend. That's all that matters. So if you can make that happen, if you don't have camo and you want to get some, don't go buy brand new camo. You don't want brand new camo. Brand new camo is shiny and shitty. You got to wear it and wash it and get all that brand new shine off of that, brand new stink off of it. It takes several trips to the field to even start that process. So, like, go down to a surplus store, man, and get some multicam that fits you. You know, go to Walmart and get their basic-ass camo. Go to Bass Pro or Cabela's. Just basic shit. You don't need really, really high-end stuff to start. Where the high-end camo comes in has nothing to do with the pattern. Nothing at all. You want to get into the really high-end camo, it has nothing to do with the pattern.
Yeah.
It has everything to do with the quality of the clothing at this point. You're buying a, you know, if you get really, I don't know, Sitka camo or whatever, I don't care about their pattern. Patterns are irrelevant. I'm getting the quality of that jacket or the quality of the pants. You know, I'm not just using regular old BDU pants that aren't really that well made. You know, if I'm getting Cry Precision pants, I don't give a shit about multicam. I want the quality of the Cry Precision pants. The fact that they're multicam is irrelevant unless I'm going to use them for hunting. In which case, yeah, it's nice to have the multicam pattern. So get whatever, man. Basic freaking camo. It doesn't need to be special. Cover everything you can. Face, hands, everything. And understand that camo is necessary for the type of hunting you're doing. Like, as an example, when I grew up deer and elk hunting, we never wore camo, ever. I never wore a piece of camo in my whole life. In my whole life. Until I went to the Army, I never wore camo. We didn't even own any camo. I think I had like a really weird camoed bird hunting jacket that my dad had got me. You know, I still have it now. Garrett uses it. Like a brown and tan speckled bird hunting jacket. I think that's it. We never had any other camos. Went out and like neutral based greens and tans and browns, and we killed everything we needed to kill. Where you need camos, if you're going to be in close quarters, you're going to be trying to sit still motionless, you're going to call animals to you, turkey hunting, javelina hunting, predator hunting. You're calling in elk. If you're archery hunting, you got to get really close to stuff. Now I'm going to be within their visual range. I'm going to be more than just movement. I'm going to be an object. Now I need to think more about camo. You're going to be making long range shots on something. You're going to be camo. It always cracks me up when I see these guys making like these 600 yard shots on deer on video, and they're all like whispering to each other, and they're fully camoed out. He's like, hey, man. I'm like, dude, he can't fucking hear you. You could talk like this and he wouldn't fucking know you were here. He also cannot see you. He's 600 yards away nibbling on a branch. You know what I mean? You don't need to be fully dead. If that's your kind of hunting, I don't care. But, like, you probably don't need to have archery hunter tactics if you're going to be shooting something at 600 or 700 yards, whatever. So camo-wise, get some basic shit. Don't worry so much about the scent control stuff. Depending on the animal that you're hunting and how and where you're hunting, scent control may or may not be a big thing for you. If I'm moving through the woods to my deer stand in thick undergrowth, I'd probably want to, you know, make sure I don't use a scented deodorant, you know, don't take a shower that morning and smell like freaking Axe body spray going out there. You know, don't wash my clothes and tie detergent with all the little smell good pebbles and shit. Don't do that because that's going to make your freaking camo stink. And I'm going to spread that scent cone all throughout the woods while I'm walking to my deer stand. And then as I'm sitting in the deer stand, that scent cone just wafting down from me the whole time. No, I don't want that. But again, if I'm out walking through, you know, the upper pines of Utah or whatever hunting elk, I don't need to worry as much about scent control here. I need to worry about more about how I'm dispersing my scent. I'm just going to pay more attention to wind control as opposed to scent control, controlling where my scent goes as opposed to controlling what my scent is. So one thing I learned big time as a predator hunter is, like, you know, they like to say, well, a deer can smell you had a breakfast burrito that morning. And that's true. They have a great olfactory gland. But a fucking coyote will tell you who made it, you know, because their scent glands are insane. You're not hiding your scent from a coyote. You're not going to. Your scent's going to be mixed in with all the other scents. And he's going to be like, yep, that smells like scent lock. That smells like odor-reducing soap. And that smells like a dude. You know what I mean? That smells like something I don't like. That smells like something that's odd to me. I'm not going to go over there. You know, even when we used to, for several years, I really experimented with the misting idea, which is literally taking urine of different animals, putting it in a fucking spray bottle, spraying the bottom of your boots with it as you walk out to stand, and then while you're sitting on stand, spraying it downwind so that that scent goes down. And I've seen coyotes lock up downwind as they're sniffing. Okay, so that dude had a breakfast burrito, but what the fuck is the rabbit urine and the bobcat urine? And is that deer? What the hell? And for that couple seconds you confuse him, you can get a bead on him and drop him. The downside to, you know, doing that was you had to carry a bottle of fucking urine around. That's disgusting. I had it break open more than once, and that kind of broke me of wanting to carry urine around anymore. So, you know, there's definitely ways to defeat that.
I want to know, how do you get the urine?
You got to milk a bobcat. Very uncomfortable.
Okay.
Yeah. We procured it in the field. Okay. No, so legitimately, sometimes we would actually get the urine out of bladders to animals that we would kill, especially like coyotes and bobcats, stuff like that. But you can buy it, too.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, Moxon Joe was the name of the company that we used to buy almost all of our scents from.
They have, like,
lures.
Bobcat farms where they're all, like, put on machines and, like, they feed them a bunch of
milk
in
that urethra. God, I hope not. Where's PETA on that one? No, I think they get it the same way we do. They just do it from hunting and then sell it. I don't know. I don't know how they get so much of it. I'm not sure. I don't know. Never really thought about that, I guess.
Fucking weird.
Well, we would harvest some of our own sometimes. But a lot of times you just buy it. I don't even know if he's still in business, Moxon Joe. Good company to do business with. Anyways, so don't worry about all that scent control shit. You don't need it. You don't need all the expensive stuff, you know. Footwear, good. Good footwear. Good boots. Whatever boots you have right now, if they're good for hiking, they're probably good for hunting. Consider, like, you know, where you're going to be. Am I going to be in the cactus? Am I, you know, do I need something that might be a little more puncture resistant? Do I want, you know, if I'm going to be carrying a load, do I want, you know, higher boots that cover my ankles so I can, you know, protect my ankles if I roll one. Other than that, like, whatever footwear you have, it's probably sufficient. If you hike or go outside at all, you probably have good footwear. A pack? If you have a pack and it's a neutral color, it's a bright chartreuse pink, then it's probably good to take out there. Just get a regular old pack. It can be tan or green or brown or whatever, a dark color. It's fine. It's fine. Take that out there with you. It's great. And I don't even take a pack all the time. A sling bag. I carry shoulder bags, you know, just a sling bag on my side more than I carry a giant backpack if I'm not going to be going very far away from the truck. And then, you know, when it comes to the gun you need to use, just pick one. Just pick a fucking gun out of your safe. Make sure the caliber is sufficient for the animal you're going to kill. And before you're like, well, I want to hunt an elk, so I need a big old, you know, 7mm Magnum or something like that. Dude, I killed my first elk with a .243 Winchester. I was 11 years old. I've killed every other elk but one since then with a .25-06. And then I killed one with .308. And Garrett's killed his with a .65 Creedmoor. We've killed deer with .65 Creedmoor. Hell, Garrett killed one of his elk with a fucking 30-30. His very first elk he killed with a 30-30. You know, so it's like, before people get all crazy about calibers, man, we have a tradition in our family where you have to kill your first big game animal with like a shitty gun. You have to prove it's you and not the tool, you know. And so like mine was some Winchester Model 70 that my dad borrowed from some guy down the street in 243 Winchester. And, you know, it didn't really fit me or anything like that. But I had to make it work. And I did. Garrett's was a shitty, I still have it, a bolt action 30-30, right? Which I'd never even seen before. But I bought from a guy at the gym for like $200. I'm working out, and we'd worked out together quite a bit. And he's like, hey, man, you're kind of into guns. I'm like, yeah. He's like, I got a weird gun, like his old Savage bolt action 30-30. You know anybody who would want it? And I'm like, is it shitty? And he's like, yeah, it's pretty shitty. I'm like, I'm interested, because Garrett was just about to have his first elk hunt. And it's terrible. It's got a metal buttstock. Thing kicks like a mule. You know, it's got like a 18-inch barrel or something. It has a scope mount that's proprietary. You can't put any other scope mount on it. And it's got this nasty-ass, freaking cheap-ass freaking scope that you can't change because the scope mount is so weird because it's proprietary. You can't even put a better quality scope in it. And the way that the scope mount works, it kind of makes the scope a little crooked no matter what you do. So it's like, you're a kid, you know? And he did it, man. First elk, you know? Smoked her. Like, it's all him, man. Ain't the gun. After that, you can use whatever you want, you know? But you don't need a badass gun. I hunted with single shots the first several years of my life. You know, I had single shot shotguns, single shot 22s, and with the exception of that Winchester Model 70, which I only got one round for, you know, I hunted with single shot rifles. You know, my old man still often hunts with single shot stuff. So it's like, prove it's you, you know? So it really depends on what animal you're going after and whether or not the caliber that you're going to shoot is sufficient enough for. So just consider that, you know? If I'm going after a big bull elk, I probably wouldn't pull out a 243. It's a big animal, but I'd be happy with a 6.5 Creed, 270 Winchester, 260, 280, 30-06. I'm not real happy with the 308 Winchester for hunting animals. I just, the performance I'm not impressed with, really. I mean, whatever. You know, I'd kill one 243 if I had to, but I'd like to get a little bit more oomph, you know? 250, 3,000? Hell yeah. So you just, whatever, man. Just make sure the caliber's sufficient. Got a question here on Facebook. Is 223 appropriate for coos deer? Absolutely. Specifically with a 65 or larger bullet, even more so. 64 grain and up is typically where we want to go for coos deer. And absolutely. I have not killed a coos deer with a 223. I have been with several people who have helping them hunt, and several people I know and several of our students that I know have killed their coos with 223. Your biggest limitation on a small caliber like 223 isn't going to be its killing power initially, but its killing power over distance. And I'll explain that here in a second. And also just the wind. You know, in coos country, it's usually big canyon country, and you're going to be fighting the wind in one way, shape, or form. That 223 gets pushed over all over the place. So can you do it? Absolutely. Do I recommend it? Yes. Just make sure you work within the limitations of the caliber and you understand what your wind drift is. For me, if I want to kill a big game animal, and this is an easy way to tell if the caliber is sufficient, look at a ballistic chart and find out where it hits 1,000 pounds of energy. As soon as it drops below 1,000 pounds of energy, I no longer consider that caliber capable of shooting. So like my 6.5 Creedmoor, for example, my hunting rifle, drops below 1,000 foot-pounds of energy inside of about 800 yards. So for me, my maximum shooting distance for that on an animal is 700 yards. That's as far as I want to shoot him because I want 1,000 foot-pounds of energy hitting that animal. I want a good ethical kill. If you want to go less than that, go for it. I've heard people go, well, I don't know if it's necessary. Fine, do whatever the fuck you want. But for me, it's 1,000 foot-pounds of energy. So look for when your bullet or your projectile drops below 1,000 foot-pounds of energy. And when it does, that's your maximum range for that gun. That's the way I look at it. For small game, coyotes, things like that, 500 foot-pounds energy is what I want. I want 500 foot-pounds energy to be able to hit that thing hard enough to knock it on its ass and put it down. So that's my kind of threshold for that barrier. So, you know, what else do you need to get started? Well, now you got to look at specific things for the silence this stupid thing. There we go. You got to look at things that are specific to the animal. So, like, if you're going to go predator calling, well, I got to get some predator calls. but I don't need to go bananas and run out and buy a $400 Fox Pro. I can get out and buy $20 or $30 worth of hand calls and get started. You can make a decoy with a stick and a turkey feather. You know, you don't have to go crazy. So if you're hunting elk or anything like that, you don't really need anything special. I mean, depending on when you're hunting them, you know, you might need a cow call or something like that, or maybe you want, you know, a bugle, depending on when you're hunting them and what gender you're hunting. Deer, you might need rattling antlers, you might need a rattling can, you might need an estrus call or something like that. Again, depends on which gender you're hunting and where you're hunting them. Like out here in the West, you don't really need rattling antlers and stuff like that. You know, we don't see that kind of, even in the rut when the animals are mating mode, you typically just don't really need that out here. Now out in the Midwest and back in the East, more so. Now in that thick country where they're more prone to come at each other. But out here in big open country, man, you just typically don't see a great response to those kinds of things. So look at the animals. Do a little bit of research. Just read a little bit on the internet. What kind of animal am I going for here? You know? And then consider workshops or other things in your area that might teach you how to hunt. Look at your Game and Fish or Fish and Wildlife Service in your state. They have all kinds of services. If you haven't taken a hunter's education course, definitely do that. They won't necessarily teach you how to hunt as much, but they'll teach you a lot about hunting, mostly about the laws and the legalities about hunting. You'll learn a lot about what the proper processes are for hunting and things like that. And that'll make sure that you stay out of trouble while you're hunting. Look for the workshops to those same organizations and look at the different types of organizations that you want to hunt with. Like if you want to hunt elk, look at the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. You want to hunt mule deer, look at the Mule Deer Foundation. You want to hunt ducks, look at Ducks Unlimited. You want to hunt quail, look at Quail Unlimited. You know, you want to hunt predators, look at your local predator clubs. There's three or four big ones here in Arizona. There's probably a club or an organization on a national or a state base around you that can teach you and help you how to, you know, learn how to hunt. Now, a lot of them are really cool because they're big into conservation. Like when I did a lot of work with the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation for a few years, and we would go do big conservation products. You know, we'd go into watershed areas and we'd clean them up and we'd fix fences and make sure that, you know, elk weren't damaging, you know, cattle property, and we'd help, you know, survey elk numbers. And when I was really involved with the predator hunting clubs, you know, we'd go out and we'd count predators and we'd go out and we'd make sure that, you know, predator areas were properly, you know, handled by certain amounts of predators, or predator hunters, I mean. We go out and educate the public on predators and do, you know, things at schools and community centers and things like that, talking about what do you do if you encounter a coyote? What do you do if you encounter a bobcat? What do you do if you encounter a mountain lion? You know, what do you do? How do you tell a rabid animal? You go to schools and teach kids about that kind of stuff. Like, there's all kinds of outreach that these clubs are doing as well. And so if you're looking for a way to get involved in your community, that's another great way where you can go get involved with these people. And again, you're just going to meet these amazing people who are also hunters. And you have these badass banquets that are always going on. You can win all kinds of cool hunts and guns and cool gear and all kinds of cool opportunities in these organizations. So, again, there's just such a great community that you can involve yourself in if that's your thing, right? You can be uno solo, freaking hunter, lone wolf guy if that's what you want to do. That's fine. But there's a lot of opportunities to be involved in other things. So what else do you need to kind of get involved in hunting? Well, here's two other things I highly recommend. The first one is, if you're not already, make sure that you're working on physical fitness. There's nothing more disappointing than wanting to be able to go out and hunt and not physically be able to get to the hunting site. So make sure that you're working on your physical fitness. Make sure you're walking up and down hills over varied terrain. Go out and hike. Throw a little weight on and hike. Make sure you can carry a little bit of weight. And by a little bit, I mean 30 to 45 pounds, you know, over a couple of miles, over a few miles, before you really need to like totally stop and take a break. Maybe learn a little bit about field craft. Learn about some concepts of survival or self-reliance. How do I start a fire in an emergency? How do I signal in an emergency? Learn about trauma first aid. I mean, this thing just opens up all these cool skills that you can utilize and learn about because you're going to want to go out into an area where it really is just you. You taking care of you. You learn about water purification and where there is water and how to find water in your location. For some of you, that's easy. You just walk over there and get water. For those of us here in Arizona, it's so easy. We got to learn how to purify water, what water can be purified and what water can't. There's water here that you literally could purify and it's still not purified. You get water, you know, downstream from an old mine site which we have a bunch here, and it's got heavy metals in it. You drink that shit, you're in deep shit. You know, any you're not going to carry a water purifier out there that's going to take care of that. You can get them out, but not with the stuff you're going to carry in your backpack. So you got to learn about those kind of survival concepts. Well, that's thing number one, is just learn about physical fitness and what it's going to take to get your body in better condition for that. And the second part is, right, make sure that you know the laws. Do not run afoul of the law. Here in Arizona, we have different laws than you might have in wherever you are, right? Indiana or Pennsylvania or Florida or whatever. We're not going to have the same laws. So that's where a hunter's education class can really help. But also make sure that you're studying the laws on your own about the animals. And remember, the rules change potentially from animal to animal. Like here in Arizona, I can load my rifle and drive down the road with it. But in Colorado, I can't do that. If I'm actively hunting, I cannot drive down the road with a loaded rifle at all. That's a huge change. Just crossing a border into a different state, a neighboring state, where I also hunt. So I've got to make sure I know those little simple rules. You know, their seasons are different for the predators that I hunt. I go to California sometimes to, you know, shoot coyotes. I can't hunt bobcats in California. You know, that's something I need to know. I can't shoot mountain lions in California. That's something I need to know. You know, you need to know the different laws in the different places that you're going to go so you can have a fun, successful hunt and not end up in trouble with the law. So make sure that you know the laws. You know, we had Jared from the Arizona Game and Fish as a game manager or wildlife manager on the show. I don't know, it's been a few months ago now, but if you haven't listened to that show, go back and listen to that show we did. It's like freaking 2 hours long.
Yeah, it was a great show.
But it was a lot of fun about learning from Jared about, you know, natural resources and his job as a game manager and some of the crazy stories that he's got. And he is an active sportsman. He's a hunter. He's a fisherman. He's just killed his first bison. Like, this guy's always out there doing cool stuff, and it's also his job. So, I mean, he's really got it made. And you look at that, and you listen to those kind of guys, man. Those are the kind of guys you're going to be dealing with out there for the most part. Not all wildlife managers, unfortunately, are like Jared, but for the most part, it's good people. And those are the kinds of people you're going to be dealing with. You know, you need to learn. Those are the people you're going to be dealing with, not a street cop. That's not who you're dealing with out there. You know, so get to know the laws and how they're applied in your state. Some places are a little more harsh than others. Get to know which ones are and which ones aren't. Not so that you can break the law, but just so you understand how those wildlife managers are going to be in that area. You know, when I'm down near the Arizona border with Mexico and I run into a wildlife manager and he approaches me with a carbine slung, I don't take that personally offensive versus when I encounter one up by Payson and he kind of cowboy hat draws over my way. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not, and he does his carbine somewhere in his truck. You know what I mean? Like, I don't take offense to the first guy. I just know that those guys have slightly different roles even within the same job. So understanding that is really important. So that's really it. I mean, when you're looking to get started in hunting, that's kind of the process, right? Understand the love of nature that hunting entails and the love of conservation that hunting entails. Find the right people to be around and the right people to kind of mentor you and teach you about hunting. Go out with the gear that you already have. As you find limitations of that gear, replace it with other stuff, but don't think that you need a ton of badass shit to get involved in hunting. You just don't. I mean, when I got Drew involved in hunting, it was like, I don't think we bought anything. Just like, yeah, here's your gun that you've always used. Use this. And then here's the camo that you already have. Just use that. I guess we did buy you some new shirts.
Yeah, but that was only because we were doing big game stuff. That's when we went out for, oh no, I guess we bought that for coyote hunting.
Yeah.
Because usually we just wear our regular clothes for squirrel.
Yeah. We bought you some camo stuff because you just needed a little bit, you just need something that fits you better. You know, that is the downside with ladies is guy camo doesn't always fit you as well because it's not cut for you. And there are some good lady camo patterns out there. Or not patterns, but companies that make good lady camo. So, you know, that's definitely something to consider.
Yeah.
If you're a lady, is look at some of the different lady stuff because it's just cut better for ladies.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But that's pretty it. I mean, I don't think we really bought you anything else.
Two shirts.
Everything else we pretty much had.
Mm-hmm.
We just pushed it into work. You wear your normal green or tan pants and a camo shirt and camo hat, and out we go with the normal guns you already use.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, again, it's just understand you don't have to go out there with tons and tons of shit. You just don't. So if you guys have any questions about hunting, feel free to email them over, info@trainingaz.com. Make sure you look at your local clubs. Make sure you learn your local rules. Make sure that you know, look at all the organizations. They're both national and state and even community or local based to you, and get involved with them if you're looking to get involved in hunting. You should know how to hunt. You should know how to provide for yourself. You should have at least once in your life the experience of field to table, of seeing an animal in its element in the wild, taking its life, cutting it up, and serving it to your family. That is a process that you should definitely understand and experience. 100%. So, there you go. If you want us to come out and train with you, remember you can always email us info@trainingaz.com.
You forgot the most important thing.
What?
It's Shark Week.
Oh my God. It is Shark Week. It is Shark Week. We started last night.
Yeah.
And it will continue throughout the week.
The rest of the week.
Drew made shark bait popcorn last night. We sat around with the kids watching Shark Week, watched Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
Do tonic immobility on a shark and tag it, and awesome stuff. Taking Mike Tyson, the great Mike Tyson, from being scared to swim in the pool with an animatronic shark to being in the bottom of the ocean surrounded by sharks. And it was cool. That was a cool process. I like when they do that with celebrities. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
But and watch sharks. God, we were watching Shark Week till freaking midnight last night. But it is Shark Week. So one of our favorite predators, one of our favorite animals out there in nature. But definitely don't hunt sharks.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
They don't need to be managed. They're on the decline. They need to be managed up. A different way.
Yeah.
They need to be managed up, not down. So absolutely. All right. Get our get hosting information from us if you need it, info@trainingaz.com. Easy to host us out to where you are. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room, Independence Training, and Red Wire Gear. We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group, so make sure you look at the other shows on the network. Tons of them. Next week, we're going to be doing a listener Q&A. All right? So this week, submit all your questions for the show to either info@trainingaz.com, the Patreon page, our Instagram, or our Facebook. And we'll be doing a story post on the Arms Room Show Instagram about the Q&A, getting everyone's questions. And whatever question it is, we're going to answer it. Whatever your question is. We've been doing this a lot on social media. It's been really popular for us, especially with Independence Training. So we're going to try it on the Arms Room Show and see what happens. So we're just going to be spending the whole show answering your guys' questions. Ask us anything you want. Get those questions over to us before next Monday morning, and we'll make sure your question gets on the show. So until then, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.